Week 129 of Brad's Branded Thoughts.
We are getting close, Alex, to the start of Iowa football. We're going to be talking roster today. We kind of paused. We were originally going to record this past weekend. The good news about waiting is this is kind of like Iowa Media Days this week. Yesterday, we're recording this podcast on Wednesday. We will release it this evening. And yesterday, the Iowa offensive players met with the media over Zoom. Today, it's defensive players. And then on Thursday, it's the Iowa coaches. So we wanted to get something recorded before Thursday or before Friday. So we are recording this, but we got some good information from that media availability yesterday, and we are going to talk about it. But first and foremost, Alex, this has been a really, really active week news-wise, a very active week news-wise, primarily because we also heard from Fran McCaffrey yesterday. Here are some of the things that Fran gave us as far as tidbits that are news-related. By the way, you're going to be able to hear some outside noise. I'm recording this away from home, so excuse the background noise. But Fran did confirm yesterday, Alex, that Iowa is planning on playing a multi-team event, which many teams are doing in place of their regularly scheduled or their previously scheduled usually Thanksgiving week tournaments. They'll play in the Bahamas or in Maui or in Florida. A lot of teams are playing these MTE events, which are being played at their home venues. They're getting smaller schools or just other schools in and fill the chart, so to speak, or the bracket. Iowa originally actually had scheduled this, which is, I thought was interesting because I don't know the last time Iowa's had an MTE at home. And they, I believe it was Southern, North Carolina Central, maybe South Dakota State. I don't think it was South Dakota State. I'd have to look. But it was basically three mid-majors. And they were originally the teams that were scheduled. Now, what we got from Fran yesterday was basically confirmation that, yes, this is what Iowa's doing. He did say the number of games Iowa's playing. They're playing 27 games, which to me is good news. I thought it was a good chance it could have been less than that. He confirmed that Iowa State will be on the schedule, as they always are, at home. The ACC Big Ten Challenge will take place, and it sounds like that will take place home and away type setup, as normally those events are. We don't know who Iowa is going to play in that event, although we've heard rumors that the Big Ten is that Iowa may play North Carolina. We've heard rumors that it may be Illinois Duke, and we have also heard, I believe the other one was Wisconsin, Virginia, which would be a talk about a battle of defensive players or defensive teams. But we don't know. We haven't heard about the ACC Challenge, but those two games are on the docket for non-conference, plus the MTE, which would be three games because there's three other teams besides Iowa that are going to be in that event. Again, we don't know if that'll be the three teams that were originally scheduled for that event, but we do know that there will be a four-team event. So that encompasses, right there, that encompasses five games. Where are the other two coming from? Well, there have been rumors that the Gavitt tip-off games, which is the ACC or the Big Ten and the Big East annual event, may not happen this year. Now, I'm assuming that's probably because of either testing protocol that the two conferences can't agree upon or some other information, because a lot of these Big East schools, remember Creighton, Marquette, a lot of schools from the Big East are local. So it would have been easy, I would think, from a strategic standpoint. And we had heard rumors that maybe Creighton would be Iowa's opponent in that event. But again, no confirmation if that event is actually happening this year, but that could be one of the other two games. And then what about the seventh game? Well, Fran didn't go there, but last night, the absolute bombshell, Alex, broke. And you know, I don't think I've ever felt so giddy and so proud, and here's my homer coming out, proud of the Iowa basketball program as it relates to scheduling and putting yourself out there, as I was last night. According to CBS Sports, Iowa has booked a showdown with the number one team in the country, Gonzaga, on December 19th at the Pentagon in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. If you recall, South Dakota, the Pentagon specifically, was where Iowa played Colorado a couple years back. They were scheduled to play Oregon State in the Pentagon this year. According to CBS Sports, that game has been scrapped, and it has been replaced by Iowa-Gonzaga. Interestingly enough, CBS Sports also said the Texas Tech-Gonzaga game, which was scheduled for that very day, was canceled. So both teams canceled Power 5 games to play each other, Alex. I mean, what? First of all, what's your reaction? I'm going to get into my reaction here in a moment. I think you probably know what my reaction is. But what was your reaction when you initially heard this report, assuming it's true?
Well, it just signifies how Iowa's on a different plane this year. We're kind of not used to thinking about Iowa being at the top of the pack nationally. And I think this just is another sign that this year is going to be different. We know the hype has been pretty high going in with Garza coming back and basically everything else being in place, losing very little from last year. And this just goes to show that Iowa's, at least for now, is thought of as being right up there with the big dogs.
Literally the big dogs, the Gonzaga Bulldogs. And Alex, it's interesting because, you know, Kirk Ferentz, we know that Colin Cowherd, and not to throw him into the mix here, but we know back in 2015, Iowa was really had the spotlight on them because they went undefeated. And Colin Cowherd went out of his way to say that, you know, Iowa never schedules anybody. They schedule North Texas. They schedule Miami, Ohio. They schedule Illinois State. And that is true. They do schedule those teams. And I think we've always kind of defended Iowa from a football standpoint because they don't have a whole lot of flexibility if they continue to play the Iowa-Iowa State game. They just don't. I mean, you look at a team like Wisconsin, a program like Wisconsin, yeah, Barry Alvarez is the AD. I think he's one of the deans of college football. Came from Iowa originally. I think Iowa fans are all, especially fans that were around during the Hayden Fry years, are kind of bitter about that. But let's be honest, Barry Alvarez has done a great job up there, and he does. He schedules. We've seen Wisconsin play LSU. We've seen them go out and schedule games to get teams like Oregon. And more power to them. That's great. And that's what Iowa fans want. The problem is the difference between Iowa and Wisconsin. They're two different programs. Wisconsin does not have another rivalry outside of their conference that they are committed to playing. Now, I'm okay with having the discussion about whether or not Iowa should play the Cy-Hawk game. I personally think they should. Now, I a couple of years back, if you would ask me that, I think we've talked about that in the podcast, and I'm not so sure Iowa should have at that point. But Iowa State, I think, has taken some big steps forward. Of course, we saw the win last week, Alex, against Oklahoma. Very impressive win. We'll talk a little bit about that later in the show. But my point is, Wisconsin has scheduling flexibility in football, especially with that ninth game. You know, previous to the nine-game Big Ten schedule, Big Ten teams had four non-conference games. And we saw Iowa. Like, I remember they had a home and away against Pittsburgh. You probably remember that game in 2015, which I thought was ironic that Cowherd was criticizing them. They did schedule Pitt. So in a way, back then, you could kind of criticize them for not scheduling tougher opponents. Although Pittsburgh, you know, they're an ACC team, and they've had top 25 years. In fact, I think this year they're in the top 25. We saw Iowa play Arizona in 2009 and 2010. So they did that back then. It's so much harder now because you've got a ninth Big Ten game, which should give them credit. They should be getting praise for that because you have the SEC that I believe they still play just eight games typically in the conference. And they get four non-conference games. And typically Alabama schedules an FCS and then a couple, you know, maybe one other Power 5 game and then Cheesecake game. So we know that was unfair, but it's so much harder for Iowa now to schedule, they're not going to go out and schedule USC or Florida, you know, or South Carolina. They're just not going to do that because they basically got to have two filler games. If you're going to have a nine-game conference schedule, you're not going to schedule two more Power 5 conference games. And then, you know, you only get one other, you know, money game for one of these small schools, you and I or Illinois State or Miami, Ohio, whatever. So we kind of always defended Kirk with that line of reasoning. Although I think there was, you know, he deserved. There were times where I've been frustrated with the scheduling as well, especially when Iowa State's been down. But as it relates to basketball, Alex, it's interesting because Fran's been here since, 2010? And we just had Matt Gaetans on last week. And I remember that first year, and I'd have to look back at the schedule. Maybe we can do that on a future podcast when we actually do our preseason predictions for the basketball team, which will be in about a month, because the season's a little over a month away. It's incredible how time has flown by. But my point is, you know, I remember back freshman year the rookie, Fran McCaffrey's rookie year at Iowa. They played South Dakota State the first game of the year and lost. And, you know, a lot of those teams that were early on in the Fran McCaffrey era they just didn't schedule great competition non-conference-wise. And you wonder, well, why is that? Well, I think it's very simple. And Fran actually has spoken on this. And I think this is the perfect example. What we just saw last night is a testimony to this. I think Fran has a lot of control over the schedule, first of all. I think coaches do. I think for the most part, coaches have a large role in who gets on the schedule. It's not just the AD. It's not, you know, I mean, I would think it's primarily Barta and Fran, and I think probably more so Fran has a lot of pull in this. But my point is, Fran has said in the past that they try to schedule based on where he feels his team is at. And, you know, I remember him commenting in past years when they have had a tougher schedule, like last year. I mean, Iowa didn't have a bad non-conference schedule last year. Remember, they went on the road in Las Vegas. They played Texas Tech. They played San Diego State, who ended up being a top five team much of the year. They played Syracuse on the road. They played Iowa State on the road. They played, you know, Cincinnati and Chicago. So they had a tough schedule last year. I think we both agree. Now, none of those teams are Gonzaga, but my point is, he's had years where he's done that. He's scheduled really quality games. I thought last year was a good example of that, a quality schedule, tough schedule at times. And then he's had years like in 2010, where you look at it and you say, well, it's a pretty simple schedule, not a whole lot of tough games. And you think, well, they're just trying to get money, or they're just trying to schedule small opponents to, well, first of all, it's not making them any money to schedule small opponents coming in to put a whooping on them. But you may reason it's because they want to, you know, rack up the wins. And that may be the case to a degree. I think every team's after wins and, you know, numbers in the win-loss column, but this is a perfect example of he schedules based on what his team is capable of, what his team is ready for. He said that in the past when he scheduled easier and he's had easier schedules. He said, well, our team wasn't ready for anything more than what we scheduled. And then he's increased that. And I think this should shut up all the doubters, all the critics who, oh, and again, I don't think you have a leg to stand on, because the last couple of years, Iowa's had pretty darn good non-conference schedules. But this should really shut them up if it's true, because Alex, Iowa went out there and, I mean, I don't know who contacted who. I'm not sure how this. I know a lot of teams are revamping their schedules due to COVID. A lot of original games that were scheduled are not happening because of COVID-19. So teams are having to basically, overhaul their whole schedule. But it would have been much simpler for Iowa, with the team they have, for Fran to say, let's go get, you know, Bradley. Let's go get, you know, Missouri State. I'm trying to think of teams in the region. And let's just rack up some wins, because we got a 20-game conference schedule that's in the toughest league in the country. The Big Ten is the toughest league in the country. We've got 20-game gauntlet. We're already playing the ACC Challenge. We're already playing Iowa State. We may be playing the Gavitt games. And we got to think about COVID. It would have been very easy for him to say that. And instead, he went out and scheduled literally. At this point, you cannot really argue against it. As of right now, this is the toughest game on paper that you could possibly schedule. Am I wrong on that, Alex?
No, I mean, we're used to Gonzaga being a powerhouse every year, pretty much, and this year is no exception to that. It'll be quite a measuring stick, and I'm wondering if that's part of what Fran is thinking. He knows that this team this year is for real, Iowa team, and
but
he wants.
Don't you feel like this is in a way? And I'm okay. I'm fine with it, because you wonder. You know, people have asked him, And they've asked the players, how are you guys going to handle the attention? How are you going to handle the expectations, the hype? There's more hype now than there's more hype. I think we both can agree on this. I think Lute Olson maybe had a year where I was projected in the top five. I don't think they achieved that ultimately, but this may very well be the loftiest of expectations in the history of Iowa basketball, minus maybe that one year under Lute. But to me, you know, they've said, Fran McCaffrey has said, and the players have said, you know, we're okay with the expectations. We're going to just take it like any other year. And the expectations are one thing, but we actually have to perform. And they can say that all they want. Every team's going to say that. You know, some coaches, Mark D'Antonio, before he retired from Michigan State football, I remember him really kind of downplaying expectations. And he realized his team played better when they were the underdogs and when no one expected them to do anything. And I think Kirk Ferentz kind of operates similarly with Iowa football. They seem to do better with less expectations. This might be a year where Iowa football could have a lot of success because there aren't really a lot of people talking about Iowa. And we'll get into that later. But, Alex, to me, this move yesterday, if it indeed happens, and again, that's still an if, and we've not had any confirmation from Gonzaga or from Iowa on this, but CBS Sports is reporting it, and they gave some details about it. To me, this is Fran McCaffrey and this Iowa program saying, bring on the expectations, we're bought in. And I'm okay with that. And I think that's a bold, bold move on the part of Fran. And, you know, in the back of my mind, I've always thought, especially when it comes to Iowa football, trying to, you know, if they did somehow drop the Asiha game or they went back to 8 games in the conference, which probably is not going to happen, and they did go and try to schedule an Alabama LSU, I almost wonder, would those teams want to play Iowa? And Wisconsin's able to get them on the schedule, so you think, well, they probably would be, maybe. But it's interesting with basketball. Every year we see Michigan State, Kentucky, Duke, Kansas, Michigan State. You see all these, basically the same rotation of teams playing each other every single year. And I kind of get tired of it. But what they're doing is they're building up their resume. Like you said, they're testing themselves early. And I don't know if I just didn't think Iowa, you know, we thought we kind of had an idea what the schedule would be like, but now we see all these schedules being revamped. And I guess I did not expect this. And it's interesting to know that Gonzaga was all for it. Of course, Gonzaga needs resume wins too, because they play in the West Coast Conference. Of every power out there, they play in the dinkiest of conferences, but they proved year in and year out that they're legit. And you can't really doubt them. I mean, I can't tell you how many times I've stayed up late to watch a Gonzaga game on the West Coast, and I'm rooting so hard for the team they're playing, and they usually blow them out by 30 or 40. It's amazing how Mark Few just night in and night out, keeps those guys focused and continues to get recruits there. Like, it's incredible. And he stayed at Gonzaga all these years. But Alex, to me, this is Fran McCaffrey saying, we're bought into the expectations, bring them on, let's go. And I have no problem with that at all. And frankly, I'm darn proud of the guy.
Yeah, and I think what you touched on is kind of parallels my thoughts. I mean, if you go to another year, and this goes for football or basketball, but if you go back a few years, Iowa maybe is not on the map nationally. And so if you talk to Gonzaga, they're not going to have they're not going to have the interest in playing Iowa as a in the same context, unless you're winning a more of a, you know, powder puff game or so, you know, and Iowa's down. That's the thing about Iowa, is they're usually not down or up that much. They're usually kind of in the middle, at least in football, we're kind of used to that. And but this last year is totally different in basketball, where they're on the national map, mainly because of Garza winning awards and being in the running for awards. So, you know, Gonzaga is obviously aware of Iowa this year, and you got to think that had a big factor in getting this game scheduled.
How surprised were you when you saw that last night, though? Because I just happened to flip through, and I didn't expect that, because like I said earlier in the day, Fran wouldn't really confirm. He basically said, well, we've got an idea of who we're going to play, but nothing's official, nothing's set right now. I mean, how surprised were you when you heard that announcement?
I was scale 1 to 10, probably 8. I mean, we obviously know that there's more hype going in, but it's still kind of a something we're not used to. So I was pretty surprised.
Let's be honest. I mean, December 19th, which I just realized that this morning. Do you realize that December, you know what day that is? December 19th?
No.
That's a Saturday. That's the week. That's the day of the Big Ten championship game. What the heck? I mean, no. Now, I don't think Iowa probably. I wonder how that works, because that had to go through the mind of Gary Barta, whoever, you know, is in charge of the logistics of it. Again, Gonzaga already had a game scheduled that day that they apparently are canceling. It'd be great if they could schedule it a different day. Because I can you imagine if Iowa wins the West and they're in the Big Ten title game and that the Iowa Gonzaga is at the same time? What the heck are you going to do? What the heck are you going to do? What game are you going to watch?
Yeah, I mean, they're probably going to be in the same time zone, too, if it's in Sioux Falls.
I mean, here's what I hope. I don't know if the big, remember, Iowa's playing, remember, Iowa football's playing that day either way, because remember, this year in football, they've got, it's championship week. So it's not just, you know, typically you would have just the Big Ten championship game. But this is the year where we have, you've got the East and the West playing each, or the second team in the East and the West playing each other. You have the third team in the East and West playing each other. So, I mean, Iowa's playing that day no matter what, whether they're the one seed, whether they're the two seed, or the three seed. Do you think, I mean, to me, Gary Barta and Iowa had to look at that, because, of course, Gonzaga doesn't care. They're not playing football. But to me, you'd have to look at Iowa and prefer not to play that day, wouldn't you?
Yeah, it makes you wonder if they just, that was just the only option and they wanted that game so badly. It's hard to know.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking as well. If it was one of those things where they just said, look, we don't want to play that game, but we don't want to play that day, but if we have to, we will. And I agree with you on that. So we'll see. I mean, maybe they can get that game. Who knows when the football game is going to be? I don't know what the layout for the championship day is going to be for football. Obviously, the Big Ten championship game is always played in the evening, but I don't know about the other games. You know, the 2 versus 2, 3 versus 3. If you're smart, and I don't know who's going to be carrying that game. By the way, let's think about that. Gonzaga's preseason number one by a lot of pundits. Iowa's preseason butt number 5. If that game, if those two teams, you know, stay in around those rankings as we head to mid-December, can we both agree that's the game of the week nationally? That might be the game of the year. I mean, maybe that's a little bit much because there's probably going to be, you know, other top 5 matchups throughout the year, but you could argue that's the non-conference game of the year nationally.
Yeah, I mean, it's got to be right up there because at least for preseason predictions, I mean, you couldn't have too much more of a non-conference high-ranking opponents like that. So, yeah, it definitely sounds like that.
So it'll be interesting to see because, I don't know when the football games are going to be played. You know, I don't know. I wouldn't think from Big Ten standpoint, from a television standpoint, the Big Ten's not going to want to play every seeded game. I would think you'd want to play, okay, you play the 7 from each division. You play the 7 seeds. Those games are at 11. The 6 seeds are at 11. Then the 2 o'clock slot or 2:30 slot is, you know, 4 and 5, the 4 and 5 games. And then you have 5 o'clock is the 3 game, and then 3 and 2, and then you got the championship game in the evening. I don't know. I don't know how they're going to do that. Maybe there'll be a game. There's talk about, you know, the Big Ten's trying to schedule more games on Friday. Maybe there's a chance that a game is going to be scheduled on Friday, but I guarantee the Big Ten championship game is not going to be on Friday. That's going to be on Saturday. So I don't know. We'll wait and see. Obviously, there's a lot still to be determined, but I just thought, holy cow, I'm darn proud. Fran McCaffrey deserves an attaboy. There's just no question about it. That is an absolute blockbuster. And I think we both didn't expect it, but more power to Iowa. I love it. Illinois has been getting a lot of attention. And again, who cares really about preseason attention? I mean, preseason attention is what it is. Illinois has been getting a little bit more than Iowa lately. Andy Katz, I know, has Illinois ranked a spot ahead of Iowa. Remember, Alex, Illinois returns two of the best players in the country in Kofi Coburn, the big boy, and then Io DeSumo. So both guys, I don't think, were expected to come back initially. Both coming back. So Illinois, they're getting just as much, if not more, hype than Iowa. So, I love it. I love the fact that Iowa, people are predicting Illinois may play Duke in the ACC Big Ten Challenge. That may be true, Alex. Typically, the ACC and the Big Ten, typically those conferences try to schedule games between their best teams from their respective conferences, if that makes sense. So, that's why we often see Michigan State and Duke in the ACC Big Ten Challenge, or, Ohio State and North Carolina, Michigan and Virginia. But the thing is, this year, the projections for Big Ten are, the top three, I don't think you include Michigan State in the top three right now. I think they're going to be right there at the end. But Illinois, Iowa, and Wisconsin are considered the top three teams in the Big Ten. Wisconsin won the Big Ten last year. They returned everybody. Illinois, we know what they're projected at. And, of course, Iowa. So it will be interesting to see who Iowa gets in the ACC Big Ten Challenge. If the rotation stays true and Iowa gets a home game since they played in that challenge on the road last year, then Iowa might play a North Carolina at home. They may play a Virginia at home. They may play a Duke at home. And Alex, I think we can agree whether it's any one of those three teams. Holy heck, you get seven non-conference games. One of them's against Gonzaga and one of them could be Duke at home. Again, I'm all for it. I'm with you. I think you test your guys early. And if you lose the game, of course we'd love to see Iowa win either one of those games, if not both. If they win both, they lose both, they split them, whatever, it's going to get them prepared for an absolute gauntlet in the Big Ten. The Big Ten is absolutely loaded. I saw John Rothstein of CBS Sports talking about this last night, how tough the Big Ten is going to be, even down to the bottom. The guys that Nebraska has coming back. Some of the guys that were injured last year for Northwestern are back. And you think, well, those guys are they're bottom feeders. I guarantee you, if you put Nebraska and Northwestern in the ACC, no offense to the ACC, of course the ACC's got great teams, they always do, but you put them in the ACC or the Big 12, I guarantee you they're not bottom feeders. I'm not saying they're going to finish top half of the conference, but they're not going to be bottom feeders, and so it's just going to be weird. This as good as the Big 10 was last year, we didn't get to see it translate itself into the NCAA tournament. I think it's going to be better this year. And I'm just, we'll wait and see when we get an official announcement about the Iowa-Gonzaga game. We'll wait and see when we get an official announcement about the ACC Big Ten Challenge. I'm also anxious to hear about the Gavitt games because, Creighton's been a darn good team of late. Weren't they top 10 last year at one point?
I'm not sure. I know they were good.
They were down in that Las Vegas event as well with Texas Tech, Iowa, and San Diego State, which ended up being one of the best tournaments in hindsight. At the time, it wasn't considered to be that, but all four of those teams were pretty darn good, especially Iowa, San Diego State, and Creighton. Texas Tech was actually, I think, top 15 to start the year. So it's going to be interesting. We're going to continue to learn more about the schedule as it goes on, and maybe we get an opportunity, Alex, where I don't know if you can do this, but you think there's any way that Iowa could wait until like the last week of football season before scheduling the time with that game with Gonzaga? Do you think that's something that a week away that both basketball programs could do from a strategic and TV standpoint? Do you think they could wait and say, let's see where Iowa is at for that championship day? That way we can schedule it at a different time.
I don't know. I'm not sure. That's got to be something they've talked about. Just scheduling that game. I'm sure it's something they've thought about. So I would like to know what their thought process is. I'm not sure how you deal with that particularly. It's tough.
I remember last year Iowa was down that Las Vegas challenge the same day they played Nebraska in football. And the games were separated. Iowa played Nebraska in the afternoon. Then the San Diego State game was in the evening. And that was, of course, a tournament, so they played that later time slot because they won. So, good for them, but that was a pretty fun day. You get to watch one football game, and then you go right into a basketball game. And let's be honest, a great basketball game. San Diego State was terrific last year, and Nebraska-Iowa was a great rivalry. So, that was great, but I'm just going to say this right now. Say Iowa wins the West this year in football. and then they play Gonzaga. That will be, would you agree, we'll probably never see, at least I not in my lifetime, we'll probably never see a single day with multiple Iowa events of that caliber ever.
Yeah, I mean, I can't think of anything. I mean, you have, first of all, just the basketball matchup is almost unprecedented. I think it is in my lifetime anyway, of watching Iowa. And then you add on a game of that significance on the football side of things, and that's quite a combination.
So we'll follow it. I mean, it's going to be interesting to see here, but we are wanting to devote most of this show to football. So, Alex, let's talk a little bit about football. We can't really break down the depth charts right now because we don't have depth charts. You know, typically, I think Iowa usually releases a two deep early on in fall camp, but it's fall camp so much different. I mean, here we are in October. We haven't started the season yet. We're in fall camp. The kids are during, you know, involved with classes. It's just a different lead up to the season. So we don't have a depth chart to break down yet. We are going to make some prediction as far as what we anticipate seeing. But what we really want to focus on here, this is not our official preseason show. We'll get that, before the season, most likely next week, possibly the week after, but most likely next week. We're 2.5 weeks away, Alex, from the start of the season. And by the way, it's 74 degrees in Des Moines, Iowa right now. So let's hope we get this kind of weather in a couple of weeks. But let's talk about what we heard yesterday, first of all, and then we can kind of look at the depth chart a little bit more in depth. We'll get more information from the defensive players this afternoon and the coaches tomorrow, so we'll get to chat about that on our next podcast. But let's talk a little bit about what we heard yesterday. A couple takeaways from the players. And again, you got to take everything with a grain of salt. It's simply what players are saying. It's not what the coaches are saying, and it's certainly not. They have no idea what's going to happen on Saturdays. We don't know about injuries. We were confirmed. It's ironic, Alex, that the day after we recorded our last show, in which I stated on the show that I had heard that Jimon Colbert, sources had said that Jimon Colbert was opting out for the season. And Alex, what are your, just give me your thoughts. I don't want to say anything because I consider myself to be someone in the media, obviously on a much smaller scale than a lot of the Iowa reporters. Iowa, covering Iowa is not my primary job. It's probably not even my third job. I do cover Story County, Iowa, news-wise, in addition to my daily work that I do. But what are your thoughts on reporting as it relates to Iowa? And I'm not going to say who. I think people can probably formulate this for themselves. But a certain website run by a certain Iowa reporter said the very next day after we recorded our show, I received information from Jimon Colbert that he is opting out for this year. And he treated it, this reporter treated it like a breaking news story and that he had the scoop. And what are your thoughts on that? Because we both know that he did not have the scoop. We know that, all right? And I'm not saying I had the scoop. This was reported by a different, first of all, The Athletic had it well before this other news. And I want to give this the reporter's name, not questioning his integrity as a sports writer. But what are your thoughts when things are presented this way? And it, you know what I'm trying to ask here? Like,
yeah,
it's almost like you're all, this specific reporter, sometimes I feel like it's always trying, and that's the business it is. I get it. But you're always trying to be the first to a story. But if a story's not yours, don't act like it's yours. I mean, I did not act like it was mine last week. We didn't post anything on our website or on our Facebook page or anything about it. We did talk about it on the podcast, but I said I can't confirm it. It's speculation right now. But this reporter brought it up, and you know, and maybe he got it from Jimon Colbert himself. But to me, you're not giving credit where credit is due because he was not the initial person that reported this, and neither was I. I just felt it was a little bit like a lot of things in the media, including local sports medias. To me, it was a little bit, I don't want to say disrespectful, but it was not, what am I trying to look for here?
Unethical?
I don't know about unethical. Disingenuous, maybe.
Yeah.
I mean,
What were your thoughts on that when you heard the report from Rob Howe? And well, there I gave his name. Sorry, Rob. I don't think Rob gives a rip what I say. But what were your thoughts when you heard the initial report? I just felt it was a little disingenuous to The Athletic, who had the story first.
Well, I guess it would depend on what his source was, if he actually had a closer source that he got that from. It still, even if that was the case, I think it still would have been nice for him to mention that The Athletic had right. had reported that, and at least give him credit for, even if it was speculation at the time, kind of having, who knows how they got it, but kind of having the lowdown a little bit early. If that was the case, if he purely got it from them, I mean, that's pretty obvious that that credit should have been given there too. So,
well, no, I'm sure. I don't know if Rob talked to Jaiman himself. You know, Rob, I think, formulated a decently close relationship with some of the players in Iowa, especially during this past offseason. I think Rob burned some bridges with Kirk Ferentz. I do believe that. I don't think Kirk Ferentz is very happy with some of Rob's reporting. And I know people say, well, Rob was just reporting the news. He was just giving a microphone for DJK and Akram Wadley and these guys. I get that. Like, he wasn't writing opinion pieces. He was simply giving these guys a platform to air their grievances. I don't think Kirk was very happy about it. And I get where Kirk's coming from, because no offense to Darrell. We've had Darrell on our show. Darrell's burnt some bridges. And yeah, it sounds like there were definitely were some things that, you know, Amari Spivey talked about that on our show. There have been some things that were inappropriate that happened under Kirk's watch. And those things, you know, those things are not appropriate and should be dealt with. But I don't know. And I want to get into a huge debate about what's proper for a news reporter or a sports reporter to allow on his platform, whether it be a website, radio station, whatever, and what's not. But I don't think Kirk was real happy about that. But I do think Rob formed a close relationship with certain guys. And remember, Jaiman Colbert was a guy that Kirk Ferentz put out there that really represented the program this summer during all this racial injustice and this investigation. Colbert was a guy at the forefront. And I would not be surprised if Rob Howell formed a close enough relationship because of how pro-player, how much of an advocate he was for the players, if you could call him that. I guess you could call him an advocate for the players this past summer. And I would not be surprised if Jaiman Colbert felt comfortable enough to tell Rob Howe first. The university had not said anything about it. And that's why it's just, I don't know. Again, you're probably right on that. Maybe he got it directly from Colbert and The Athletic did not. But The Athletic had reported that he was opting out. Okay? And I just, again, I didn't talk to Jaiman Colbert. I didn't talk to Scott Docterman or anybody at The Athletic. I think Scott Docterman is with The Athletic. I didn't talk to Rob Howe. Those guys don't care who I am and whatever, but it's just annoying to see that. And, I'm not questioning Rob's, credentials. I think he's done a good job over the years. I think he's probably frustrated some fans and certainly some coaches this past summer. I don't know. It's just like everything else, it's cutthroat. But let's talk a little bit about Colbert's opting out now that it's official. We lost Christian Welch to graduation last year. We lose Jaiman Colbert to opt out this year. We lose Dylan Doyle to transfer, who's starting and playing well, by the way. I think he had like 8 or 9 tackles this past week for Baylor. Those are 3 big losses, Alex. And I know Iowa plays a lot more cash, that 4-2-5, than 4-3 now with Phil Parker. But that's a big loss. How does Iowa deal with Jaiman Colbert sitting out?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good question. I mean, we kind of expect Iowa to have guys ready at those positions, but you can't undervalue, you can't understate the impact of somebody like that sitting out. And I think it will be a factor. Hopefully, you never know going in, but hopefully you have somebody that steps up, but it definitely throws things into disarray a bit. And this whole year has been thrown into disarray anyway, so it's just compounding that. But, yeah, I mean, it's definitely a loss. You know, Iowa has question marks coming in. Iowa, the football team, has a lot of good talent returning, but there are some very big question marks, and that's unfortunately going to be a little bit bigger one than it was going to be, if it was at all, to begin with. So I think it's definitely, it'll have a big impact.
One thing we did learn yesterday was that, this was interesting, Alex, and I think I shared this with you, maybe I did not. Multiple receivers, in fact, I believe all four of the start, what we consider the starting receivers, I don't know if Reganey said anything on it, I don't even know if Reganey met with the media, but I know Tyrone Tracy commented on it, Amir Smith-Marset commented on it, and Brandon Smith commented on it. Charlie Jones, Alex, I know we've talked, I think we've talked about Charlie Jones. Remember last year I brought up how he was a kid that transferred in from Buffalo, had actually played at Buffalo, and I think had like 400 yards or more his initial season with Buffalo, and he transferred in as a walk-on. He's 5'11", pretty small guy, but, you know, I remember, I don't know if we talked about it on the podcast or not, but he was a guy I looked at last year and thought, that's interesting, we're not hearing much about him, and I think the reasoning was, well, he's a walk-on, you're not going to hear a whole lot about walk-ons until they do something, but all three of those wide receivers commented that Charlie Jones is all over the field, that he's running with the starters right now. And might this shed some light, if this is true, and again, we haven't heard it from the coaches yet, of course, we have not seen Charlie Jones on the field yet, but if that's true, might this explain even more so why Oliver Martin decided to transfer to Nebraska?
That's entirely possible. I mean, that position is already stacked in a way that we haven't seen, at least I haven't seen in my lifetime. So, especially if you were to add in another guy, and you consider the fact that Martin really didn't play last year, that definitely could be the case. It's hard to know. I'm curious what his motivation, what his reasoning was for leaving, but we'll probably never know. But that's definitely possible. And
well, remember there was a time where we saw last year Max Cooper was playing ahead of. We saw Max Cooper get some run at wide receiver when Oliver Martin was not, and so that tells me that again. And maybe he saw the handwriting. Maybe Charlie Jones was really. I remember there was a comment made. I don't know if it was Brian Ferentz or someone made a comment, I believe in Bowl Prep, how Charlie Jones was going to get a chance at kickoff returns as well because he was playing so well in practice. And now we're really hearing it from players. And we've seen him. I know people like to blow up these practice photos, but we're seeing him in these practice photos quite a bit. I believe he's number 16. But what are your thoughts on Charlie Jones? I know you probably know nothing about the kid. I really don't know nothing about the kid besides remember doing research on him last year when we heard that he was coming to Iowa and he was going to be walking on. But again, he was a scholarship player at Buffalo. But what are your thoughts on him potentially being able to be a guy who comes in and plays despite the fact that Iowa has a plethora of wide receivers with Smith-Marset, and Tracy and Reganey. I mean, what are your thoughts on the potential for Charlie Jones to actually get some run this year? Especially if he's playing with the ones, to me, that tells me that Kirk Ferentz and the staff are, you know, all for it.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't seen any film of him at all, but just looking at his specs, 5'11", 187, so I'll have to watch.
He's not a big guy.
No, he's not, but... Yeah, I'll have to watch some, at least high school.
Well, you catch, like I say, he played a year at Buffalo. So, and that was a year, I believe Buffalo won 10 games that year. So I know they're in the MAC, but I think they were a pretty good team that year. And that's why it caught my attention. I remember Buffalo, thinking, well, Buffalo was pretty good. And if he was playing with Buffalo, I get that's a MAC school and you're transferring to Iowa. And I'm not saying he's going to be a star, but I remember thinking, well, he might actually be a guy who factors in at some point. So, yeah, I mean, it's going to be interesting to hear more from the coaches. Hopefully, I'm sure somebody will, because that was kind of the rumor, or not the rumor, but that was the talk of media day yesterday was, well, everybody's talking about Charlie Jones. So that'll be interesting to hear if we do hear more from Kirk Ferentz or Brian Ferentz tomorrow, if somebody asks him about Charlie Jones specifically. Anything else? As far as yesterday is concerned, I didn't get a whole lot out of those meetings. I mean, we heard Tyler Goodson say that he believes Iowa can win the Big Ten, and I think you know, I don't know. I mean, you can't really read much into that. I'm not saying they're going to win the Big Ten. And again, he's gonna be talking up his team no matter what. It sounds like Ivory Kelly Martin and Mekhi Sargent are both healthy and good to go. I've not heard anything about injuries offensively. I mean, we see most players, most of the guys that we want to see, most of the starters offensively, we're seeing in practice and in practice photos. So far, so good from the injury standpoint. They haven't been playing tackle, or they haven't been playing in full pads a real long time now. I don't know when they started here a week or two ago, but I mean, I've seen a couple observations for me just from practice. Coy Cronk, the transfer from Indiana, who's going to probably play at right tackle. Dude, it looks absolutely huge. I know we shared his number. Him and then another transfer looks absolutely monstrous, and that's Jack Heflin, defensive tackle from Northern Illinois. Alex, look up Jack Heflin, his height and weight. I mean, that dude just looks big. And I'm not saying fat. I mean, just big. And it's going to be interesting to see. I mean, he could very well be a full-time starter with Davion Nixon. And if he is, if those guys can stay healthy, I mean, Iowa's going to rotate guys at I think, interior tackle, and I think probably on the outside, the defensive end, they're going to rotate guys in, as we always see these, you know, Iowa do that. But, I mean, how big, you got those numbers there. How big is Jack Heflin listed at? What's he listed at?
Let's see. I'm seeing this must be out of high school. He was 6'3", 245, but now it's showing on the Iowa website, 6'4", 312.
312, so he's apparently lost 15 pounds since he's come to Iowa?
No, 245 versus 312.
Say that again?
The one side is showing 245, and now it's showing 312.
Oh, 312, yeah, okay. So 312 is his college weight, so... he's just freaking huge. He's a big dude. 312, is that not massive for a defensive lineman?
Yeah, and, you know.
Unless we're talking Vince Wilfork. I mean, how big was Vince Wilfork?
There have been some pretty big DTs, I guess. You know, out of high school, it looks like he was defensive end, but, you know, that's not defensive end specs right there, so. Yeah, I'm trying to think. Like, Don Henderson is big. I know there's some pretty big DTs in the NFL, but it can't be too much bigger than that.
Well, it's going to be interesting to see. And Coy Cronk, maybe look up his numbers. I know we've talked about this in the podcast, but Coy Cronk looks massive as well. It's like Chauncey Golston, as far as we're aware, is healthy. I mean, I haven't really heard anything about health-wise. But, I mean, I guess... we've talked a little bit about linebacker. It will be interesting to see how much Iowa runs 4-3 as opposed to 4-2-5. We're going to see Jack Campbell and Justin Jacobs potentially get run at Colbert's linebacker spot. We're going to potentially get to see more of Barrington Wade, who's a redshirt senior. Potentially he could be a guy that fits in and gets more playing time this year. Look, I'm missing somebody. Seth Benson is another guy, another name we've heard a lot of. I mean, they've got guys. It's just frustrating that you lose Dylan Doyle. And again, I'm not going to get into why he left. Obviously, we know why he left. But to lose Welch, Doyle, and Colbert, who are arguably probably three of your top four guys at linebacker. I mean, Nick Neiman's going to have to stay healthy this year because he's going to probably take over at Jamin Colbert's spot, be my guess. He took over in the bowl game when Colbert wasn't playing well. So my guess is he takes over there, and then, you know, if you run Dane Belton and Cash, you know, there's been talk about maybe you send Belton back in safety. Alex, how does Iowa replace Geno Stone? Because they've got Jack Kerner. We hope that he's fully, I mean, he's been in practice photos. We expect him to be a full go, despite the boating accident he was involved in this summer. Is Kayvon Merriweather maybe able to slide over to that strong safety position? Or, you know, is it going to be a Dane Belton that you know, you slide somebody else over to Cash? What do you think?
I'm not really sure. I mean, I think that's definitely going to be something to watch, a bit of a concern. I don't know. I'd probably guess on Merriweather being more likely, but yeah, we could see more moving around, and that'll be interesting. I think that'll probably be a crucial part because, in my opinion, that's one of the big areas that I've struggled with in past years. It's just, I know they seem to be able to fix it, but their secondary can blow up in a game, you know, if they have a couple blown plays. A team like Iowa, in my opinion, just isn't able to handle a lot of scoring on the other side. So just because of the way Iowa's built. Now, hopefully this year they can put up more production on offense to counter that. But I think that's a really crucial part of Iowa's defense. So hopefully they get that figured out.
So you get Dane Belton back, which is great. I mean, he's got to stay healthy. I think he's going to be a big part of this defense. It'll be interesting to see. Sebastian Castro is another guy, a hard-hitting redshirt freshman that we've heard some things about that, potentially he could play safety and play right away. I mean, obviously he's young. I don't think Merriweather played terrible his one start, and then he got hurt. So, you know, if him or Kerner are comfortable, I agree with you. If they're comfortable, you know, the other safety position, I mean, I'd much rather run with those guys than I would, you know, have to slide Belton out of Cash where he played last year. I mean, we've heard maybe Julius Brents is a guy who could step over to Cash. I think Riley Moss's name has been tossed out there as well. Who knows? I mean, we lost DJ Johnson, the transfer. He was a guy that we had heard might be able to play Cash last year, and he was playing more cornerback at the time. So I don't know. It's that'll be an interesting storyline to follow. I've said this the whole time, though, as it relates to the Iowa defense. I'm pretty much always going to be more concerned about Iowa's offense than I am their defense. It just seems like Iowa consistently figures out a way with Phil Parker or Norm Parker, whoever has been coaching the defense at that time, they've been able to figure out how to be a pretty darn good defense. And that's why I keep going back to the fact that my biggest position of concern is offensive guard. Right guard, left guard. Because they were abysmal last year. And nobody's talking, I mean, very few people are talking about it. Everyone's talking about, well, of course, the quarterback position is the most important position on the field. But Iowa historically has first-year quarterbacks that are very competent. Think about the first year under Beathard. You think about the first year under Stanzi. First year under Nate Stanley. All of them pretty darn good seasons. And so I think Spencer Petras is going to be just fine. I've never seen the guy play, and I'm just speculating, I guess, but I'm going off his history with Iowa quarterbacks. And, you know, Ferentz has endorsed Petras from the very beginning. Literally, from the beginning of this year, he endorsed Petras as the starter. So I just feel like the defense is going to get figured out. Of course, depth might be tested this year, depending on if guys get COVID and they have to sit out. I mean, it's 21 days. If you get COVID, you're out 21 days. That's a blow. We've been seeing a lot of Julius Brents and Riley Moss and Matt Hankins in the practice photos, although I've seen more of Brents and Moss. I'm hoping, you know, again, I don't want to speculate too much on this, but you're hoping Hankins isn't dinged up. I saw Hankins a couple of weeks ago, and I just skimmed through some of these photos and just noticed some players, and I don't think I've seen Hankins recently, but he's probably in there. I mean, again, photos are photos. That's all, you can't read too much into them, but those probably are your top three cornerbacks, Alex, and then Terry Roberts is a guy who's played on special teams for Iowa, and it's probably a guy who gets some run. We've heard talk about Dallas Kratoff maybe being able to play either defensive back or cornerback or safety. This is a somewhat highly touted kid, actually. So, you know, he's a guy that you look to and think, well, maybe he can step up. I mean, at corner, it seems like guys get hurt, Alex. I mean, is that fair to say? It seems like cornerback is a position where typically you need multiple cornerbacks, and that would be a minor concern of mine, is do they have enough depth if it's just Brents, Moss, and Hankins that they're comfortable with? Because let's be honest, I think it was last year, weren't they? Brents was out for a long time, and Moss was out for a long time. That's why we saw DJ Johnson against Iowa State a couple weeks into the season. So is that a concern for you? I mean, you mentioned the secondary, but is depth at cornerback a concern?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think to me that's always the, you know, it's hard to put the importance of any particular area of football team above another, but that's always the part that scares me with Iowa. It seems like they're able to manage it pretty well, but especially you start throwing injuries or COVID or whatever into it this year. That's just the part that scares me, just because, like I said, Iowa having historically not been able to put up enough points to offset a few blown plays that can really rip a game open. So that's just my big worry. And hopefully they have more depth than it looks like. Hopefully they got guys that are really showing up and showing out. So yeah, that's one of those things. I'm kind of hopeful. I know you mentioned you're not usually worried about Iowa's defense. I think we've kind of gotten used to that, but the problem with that mindset is that if you have a hole like last year, we're kind of used to having a good offensive line. Well, you have a bit of a breakdown there, and it can really just throw things into disarray. I know that's not defense, but it's the same concept. So, yeah, I mean, hopefully they can, stay healthy. And, it's not like other teams aren't going to be dealing with injuries and quarantines and all that too. But I think for Iowa, it's especially important.
All right, so we've talked about Iowa defensive backs, Alex. Let's transition a little bit to the line. Did talk a little bit about Jack Heflin, the transfer from Northern Illinois, clocking in, I believe you said, at 312 pounds. So he's what you call a big boy. Would you agree with that? He is going to be a guy who can certainly clog up space along with Davion Nixon. Of course, Austin Schulte, another big kid that Ferentz is high on, who has seen some run over the last couple of years. And certainly, we can't forget about Noah Shannon. He's another guy that has seen some run. Look at the defensive end spot. John Wagner, Joe Evans. Of course, Chauncey Golston's the mainstay there. I think we're going to see a lot of Zach Van Valkenburgh. Logan Lee has a chance in there as well. But I mean, that's eight guys that seven of which have played already for Iowa. Jack Heflin, the transfer, would make eight. And I would not be shocked if we see Matt Lorbeck, the other defensive player from Northern Illinois that transferred here. A lot of the talk was that he was going to redshirt this year, but I would not be shocked if he plays, simply because of the eligibility situation. The fact that, he's going to have a chance to play and maintain his eligibility. I would not be shocked if he plays, if he's ready. So, I mean, you look at that defensive line, Alex, and who knows if Lorbeck's going to play or not. Of course, you're not going to be able to replace A.J. Epinesa. You're not going to be able to replace Lattimore and Reef without several guys, I think. Those guys had experience with them, but they knew the system. What are your thoughts on the defensive line? I know I keep going back to this. I just feel like I was ready to reload basically year in and year out. Basically, every one of these defensive positions, defensive line is no different.
Yeah, I don't tend to worry as much about Iowa defensive line. It seems like they always have guys coming in and, they just develop guys very well. And I think now it seems to me like they're attracting guys in scouting. I think guys are wanting to play for Iowa as defensive ends. I don't think that's really ever changed. Iowa's always kind of been a line school. Most of the guys that make it to the NFL are either O-line or D-line, and there's a lot of them, so they have a good reputation. And so I'm always confident in Iowa's ability to get guys, straight out of high school and develop them.
I mean, if you look at this defense as a whole, we've kind of ran through all the positions, linebackers, safeties, corners, line. I do think it's going to be interesting to see how Joe Evans fits in, because we saw him more so as a pass rusher last year on just clear passing downs. Is he going to be big enough and disciplined enough to play, first and second down or short third down situations? I think that'll be interesting. Is there any holes that you see defensively besides potentially linebacker? I mean, again, Geno Stone is a big loss, but I mean, you're going to get either Dane Belton or Kayvon Merriweather, I think, in there to help fill that gap.
Yeah, I mean, I think we've talked about it before. I'm always a little bit concerned about the secondary with Iowa just because of the way Iowa runs their offense. They don't tend to put up a lot of points, and they lean heavily on the defense. So a few broken plays can really split a game open pretty badly. So I'm always worried about the secondary. There's probably not any real reason to be. Obviously, you have Stone leaving, which is a big loss. So that'll be interesting to see how they cover that hole up. But I don't feel – I'm not overly worried about the defense. I mean, I think we're just kind of spoiled being Iowa fans because they tend to always at least be solid. Like, when have we had a year where we think, man, this defense is just terrible? And if they've had a game or two, Kirk does make adjustments. He doesn't tend to make them on the fly, but he does game to game. And I think that, you know, that inspires confidence. So I'm just not terribly worried about the defense. The secondary is, I guess, the part that scares me a little more. The linebackers probably should, but, you know, I'm just not used to being worried about that with Iowa.
I'll tell you the year that made me gun-shy with linebackers and a little bit nervous. I believe it was 2014. I remember, I think that was the year Iowa nearly lost to Northern Iowa out of the gates, and David Johnson just ran all over Iowa. And I believe that was Quinton Alston, Reggie Spearman. Those guys, you may say, who? Yeah, those guys were starting. And they didn't start for long. In fact, I believe their shortcomings led to Bo Bauer, Josie Jewell, and of course, 2015. It's a whole totally different team. But 2014 was not good, Alex. Linebacker play really struggled, and it really, really showed. So that's my only thing. I'm not saying it's going to happen this year, but that would be a concern of mine is we have seen the linebacker corps struggle. Now, again, like you said, few and far between, but it did happen in 2014.
Yeah, I mean, it is definitely an area they need to be strong because the Big Ten typically is more of a run-heavy conference. I mean, just most schools, like the Iowa's biggest rival, Wisconsin, typically just runs it down your throat for two halves. So, yeah, it's definitely a concern. I would be a little surprised if they have a lot of issues stopping the run just because they're Iowa, but yeah, it's definitely something to keep an eye on.
Okay, let's talk about offense. I mean, where do we start? Nate Stanley's gone. Spencer Petras comes in. Alex, a lot of people are high on Spencer Petras. You and I have talked about his high school numbers, which are very impressive. In fact, he broke a lot of records that were set by the Rams starting quarterback, Jared Goff, when he was in high school. He was terrific in high school. Players are hyping him up, saying that he's very positive, very energetic. The energy is infectious. He's very confident about himself. We've heard that from coaches and players. What are your thoughts on Spencer? I mean, I know neither of you and I have not really had a chance to see him over a larger sample size, but everything we hear and we know, you know, he's 6'4", 6'5", big guy. Very similar to Stanley in that respect. Maybe a little bit more touch on the ball than Stanley. But are you concerned? I mean, it's probably a stupid question to ask. Are you concerned about quarterback when it's a first-year quarterback? You probably should always be concerned. But I just don't get worried about first-year quarterbacks under Ferentz because, again, look at the first year under Beathard. Look at the first year under even Jake Rudock. 2013 was a pretty darn good year. First year under Ricky Stanzi. First year under even James Vandenberg. I mean, talk about a disappointing career, but his first year, his first official year of starting, now he got a few reps a couple games in, as we know, in 2010, but 2011 wasn't terrible. I think they went 8-5 that year, or maybe 7-6. It was either 8-5 or 7-6. My point is, we have not seen first-year quarterbacks really struggle, and for the most part. And so I just, especially with everything we're hearing about Petras, that's not my primary concern. Maybe it should be.
Yeah, I get that. I think that's mostly true if you're, expecting a typical Iowa year. But the reason that I'm more worried about the quarterback position is because we have so much talent, especially at wide receiver, but just on offense in general. I really hope that Petras plays really well. I mean, I don't want to see this be a year where you just have a guy who's able to manage a game. You know, I think if you put one of those guys in, yeah, they would probably still go, you know, they'd still have a winning record and still be decent. But I think they really have an opportunity this year to win the West, honestly, because of Jonathan Taylor being gone and other factors. I think they have a really good chance, but it would be a shame to squander the talent they have this year. So I have higher expectations for the quarterback this year than I normally would for a newcomer. And so that's why I'm more concerned with that. I think we don't, like you said, we don't really know a lot about Petras yet. I've probably seen him throw 5 passes in my life. So, and I haven't watched his high school stuff, and that doesn't really tell you much anyway in my mind. So that's, to me, is the biggest question mark on this team. If Petras plays well, I think this team could be very good, even if there are other weaknesses on this team on defense or on the offensive line is very important also. But I think if Petras plays really well, this team will be pretty good.
Here's the problem. This brings me to my biggest concern to this team, and that's the interior of the line. We saw multiple games, 2 games specifically that come to mind last year, back-to-back at Michigan and home against Penn State, where Iowa basically lost those games because of interior line play. They didn't give up more than 20 points. They didn't give up more than 16 or 17 points in either one of those games. They lost 10-3 against Michigan, and I think it was like 16-7 or something against Penn State. The interior of the line could not protect Nate Stanley. Alex, we had a senior quarterback last year in Nate Stanley, a guy who had been through the ringer, and he had his shortcomings, we know that, but pretty solid quarterback in Iowa, a guy who was very competent, and he was helpless against Penn State and Michigan because every play, Landon Paulson, Levi Paulson, Callum Berger, whoever it was protecting him, was just letting defensive tackles basically get right through. It doesn't matter if Spencer Petras is Tom Brady. It doesn't matter. If Tom Brady is getting pressure up the middle, there ain't nothing he can do about it. Ain't nothing he can do about it. You're going to lose. And we saw that from Iowa last year, and that's why guard, not tackle. I think Iowa's sitting pretty with tackle, with Coy Cronk, Lark Jackson. I think Kallenberger can probably play tackle better than he can play guard from everything I've heard. That's why I've been an advocate to maybe slide Kronk inside. I know you don't like that idea. And they're going to be fine at center. I mean, Tyler Linderbaum has proven he's a Big Ten center and potentially an NFL center. I'm just concerned about those 2 guard spots. You got lots of guys, Schott, Ince, Britt, Kallenberg can play there. I think you slide Kronk in there if you have to. Van Wert is back from injury. I think we'll see him start, would be my guess. I think we're probably going to see Van Wert and, I would like to see Justin Britt, hopefully. I mean, again, I don't know how these guys are performing in practice, but he seems like the biggest, most athletic guy of the group, but I could be wrong on that as well. But what are your thoughts on the line? We saw 2 games back-to-back last year where that interior of the line, there's no question about it. They lost Iowa those games.
Yeah, I definitely mirror those thoughts. I'm not worried about the center at all. I'm not worried much at all about the tackles, but the guard play is the big question mark. And like you said, I mean, it doesn't matter how good a quarterback is if he doesn't have any time. So, the offensive line is, in my opinion, kind of the nucleus of the offense.
Don't forget about the running game. We did talk about how great Tyler Goodson, Mekhi Sargent, Iowa, as much as we're a run and gun, run it down your throat team, if you look at the numbers, we've talked about it in the past, Iowa hasn't had one of the best running offenses in the country in years. They very rarely are in the top 20 to 25 nationally. Very rarely. And that's a misconception people have about Iowa, is that Iowa just a great running team. They're typically not. And so that's, again, doesn't matter how good Tyler Goodson and Mekhi Sargent and Ivory Kelly Martin are, if these guys can't pass block and run block, it's going to be a long season.
Right. And guard play is maybe even more important for the run game than the pass game. Who knows? But, that's what I mean when I say that the O-line is the nucleus of the offense. That's the entire offense, because it doesn't matter what you're doing. If you have those guys, if you have weak links in that chain, it's just going to break every time, and you're not going to be able to do much. What can you do if you have guys shooting up the middle? Iowa is a
Robert Windsor, Penn State.
Right. So, I mean, I remember thinking, I think it was that game last year. I don't know if I've ever seen Iowa do it, but I'd love to see them in that game, do a toss play to Goodson out wide or something, just to get away from all that, because it was so, so nasty. It was just every play for a while. So the way that Iowa usually runs, they need good guard play above anything else pretty much. And
So who's going to start a guard, Alex?
I think probably Banwart and maybe Schott. I don't know. Hard to say.
Because you told me you thought Kallenberger. Kallenberger earlier.
Yeah, maybe Kallenberger. Banwart has more experience for sure, but from what I've heard about, I know Schott seems to be talked up by the coaches a lot, so I'm not sure. I think Banner probably just by his experience will get the spot, but we could see that change.
Larrick Jackson, we were told he went on a vegan diet and he's really slimmed down. He's still the same weight, but as far as the body fat, he's a lot thinner. Coy Cronk's a huge guy. I know I mentioned it earlier. He is huge. I mean, they've got room. I mean, you don't want guys to get hurt, but I think Jack Plum, he's been in the program for a couple of years now. He's a guy who could probably play tackle if need be, maybe the tackle of the future for Iowa. And same with Kallenberger. You can slide him over at tackle. I think you slide Cronk inside guard. You've got Britt, Anschott, Banwart, Kallenberger. I don't know. It's going to be interesting. As far as center goes, I've heard that Schott has taken snaps at center. So he's there. Again, if you have to slide guys around, we don't know how much COVID's going to affect things. I mean, we see there are positives in the NFL right now. We've had games rescheduled. I'm not going to assume that the Titans, disobeyed protocols and rules. But, hey, the Vikings were fine. They played the Vikings, no positive cases, and yet how is there a huge outbreak with the Titans? So this doesn't support the narrative that football is spreading the virus, because, again, there's like half of them are staff members. So if they're not keeping distance, that's their problem. We said a long time ago that staff members have the ability to coach without being right in the face of their guys. It'd be difficult, but you got to do it. And I think it's very clear the Titans haven't been doing that. Or there have been extracurricular things that have happened. Of course, there have been other cases. We know that the Patriots have had a couple here recently and whatnot. But anyway, I digress. Greg Maven was a guy. Greg Maven, former Iowa cornerback. He was on the practice squad of the Titans. He was actually the first guy to get it for Tennessee. So, it can happen and it can derail things. I still think these student athletes are motivated, maybe even more motivated than pro athletes. And you may say, well, that's stupid. That's stupid to think that. These kids are less mature, blah, blah, blah. These kids aren't going to get millions of dollars either way. They're not going to get guaranteed contracts. They get a limited amount of time to play football. And I think they're motivated. Now, again, we will wait and see. But let's be honest, college football, Alex, can we agree college football is happening? I mean, It's going, and we don't see it slowing down. Wisconsin's having a huge outbreak. Wisconsin football is still practicing. Now, we hope that doesn't change. But, I mean, right now, we're seeing fans in stadiums. I mean, not in huge numbers, but Iowa State had 15,000 for their win against Oklahoma on Saturday.
Yeah, I mean, I think football is happening. I don't see anything getting canceled. I mean, at this point, people are just so sick of the pandemic. Just that alone, it's even if you have guys having to sit out, I think people are going to be willing to put up with that, even if it messes up. Because it will affect games. I mean, if you have major players, especially quarterbacks and old linemen sitting out, it's going to affect the outcomes of games. But I think people are just going to be willing to accept that because everyone wants to see sports. I think we need sports. more than ever with everything that's happened this summer. So I definitely think college football is going to happen. It's not going to, I don't think the season will get canceled.
So again, we're kind of at an interesting spot right now with Iowa and their offense. You've got, again, a first-year quarterback in Petras. You've got a backup in Alex Padilla. I think we both agree Deuce Hogan's probably not going to play unless they have to go three deep, because as highly touted and people are, you know, really excited about him coming to Iowa, he's not going to have any chances. He didn't have spring ball. He had a weird fall camp, and he's not going to have non-conference games to ready himself. So I think Alex Padilla is the backup. He knows the system better than probably anybody besides maybe Petras. I don't know what that means. I mean, he's going to probably have to be a game manager if that were to happen and he has to play. But depth is really going to be tested. What about the skill position players, Alex? I know this is the biggest story of this team as far as hype. You've got Brandon Smith, Tyrone Tracy, Nico Reganey, Mira Smith-Marset. We've heard talked about Charlie Jones earlier, could be a fifth wide receiver, and we can't forget about Max Cooper. What could possibly derail the wide receiving corps from being elite this year?
Well, I think it mainly will come down to quarterback play and offensive line play. I mean, I think and injuries are always a factor, but I think the receivers are so deep. Even if you have injuries, you should be able to still get by. Obviously, you don't want to have Brandon Smith go down like last year. That's a huge loss, or Amir Smith Marset. So, you know, I don't really see this wide receivers core really being decimated. Even if they do have to tank a couple losses, personnel losses, I think they'll be able to deal with that just fine. So that's probably the least concerning position for me.
Yeah, I think Brandon Smith going down would be the worst case, because he's really the only guy that has experience that's more of a bigger athletic type. I mean, Amir Smith-Marset's very fast, but he's not as big. And, you know, Tyrone Tracy and Nico Reganey aren't that way. Maybe a Calvin Lockett could be. But anyways, again, we're looking at this from a perspective of, you know, worst case scenarios. Brandon Smith and Amir Smith-Marset go down. I still think they're going to be okay at wide receiver. I mean, I could. Can you agree with this? I could see them winning games without those two guys.
Yeah, that's basically my point. I think they'll be able to manage just fine. Not that those won't be significant losses, but they have so many guys there that, you know, Iowa's a team that I think will be able to really cover up those holes if they have to deal with them.
Fullback, I think, you know, I know you like the fullback position. They ran the fullback a lot less last year than they typically would. Monty Potterbaum and Turner Palisard are back there. I think they'll be fine at fullback. I mean, it's going to be a typical Iowa fullback position. I would be shocked if they have struggles there. If you look at the running back spot, very intriguing, because not only do you get a Tyler Goodson back, who really exploded on the scene last year. They won every game that he started, the last four, actually, to be exact. But you also have Mekhi Sargent, who's a seasoned guy from Key West, Florida, that you know, played at Iowa, has played at Iowa the last couple of years and very successful. Ivory Kelly Martin redshirted last year. He'll be back. No Torrin Young, but I think that actually helps kind of tighten up that group. And then, you know, guys in the limelight. Kevin Williams is a guy a lot of people are talking about. Shadrick Byrd is a guy who I think could end up there, who got a lot of attention preseason with Goodson. They've got depth of running back. And running back is a position where Iowa's needed depth, of, you know, during the Ferentz era. Guys get hurt. You know, there's been speculation that the artificial artificial turf at Iowa can cause problems with running backs, with knee injuries and Achilles injuries. I don't know if there's any truth to that, but certainly they want to have depth there. Your thoughts on running back this year for the Hawks?
Well, I don't think there's any year that I'm not worried about injuries at that position. I think it's just probably they take the most abuse, I think, of any position. And, you know, Iowa especially is geared around the run game. Hopefully this year they won't need to be as much. I think they still will be. It's just their identity. So you don't want to see injuries there. One thing I talked about earlier is I think it's the way the running backs are set up right now is actually good because they have different guys that can fill different roles. But the problem with that, let's say versus having, you know, multiple guys that are kind of in the middle. Now you have, let's say somebody like Goodson, who's maybe more of a speedy guy, shifty guy, who's not as powerful. The problem with having multiple roles like that is you lose one of them and then you're kind of pigeonholed in what you can do. So I think we saw that with Packram Wadley. You lose him and then you're kind of committed to more of a power game. If you lose your power guy, you're more committed to an outside game. So, you know, injuries definitely affect a lot that.
But that's the thing. I think, and I don't want to overhype Ivory Kelly-Martin, but he's sort of the hybrid. And I think Goodson's better built than Wadley ever was. But, I mean, I think kind of Sargent is more of an all-purpose back. I think Shadrick Byrd is more of the, from what I've heard, more of the bowling ball type. They don't have a Torrin Young, who was definitely that last couple of years. I'm just saying I think they could sustain more because they have more guys that I think Ivory Kelly-Martin could be an every down back.
They probably can. It's just always something that I worry about a little bit. I wouldn't say this year is definitely not at the top of my list of years where I was concerned about that position by any means. So I feel overall very positive. It's just that position always gets me a little bit worried when it comes to injuries.
It'll be interesting. I mean, look at the skill position players as we finish up with tight ends, and they just seem like Iowa's got so much more depth than they really ever have. Tight end, probably the least amount of depth, but they still have two guys I think Iowa, Kirk Ferentz can trust in Sean Beyer and Sam Laporta. Sean Beyer's a senior this year. Laporta really jumped on the scene last year. Look out for Elijah Yelverton. He's a guy who I've heard good things about recently. Luke Lackey's another guy. Josiah Miamen is a guy that was recruited fairly well from a lot of different schools. So they've got some young talent there. But Beyer and Laporta, kind of a 1-2 punch. Could you see this sort of being like a Fant Hawkinson? Of course, not trying to compare either one to Fant because Fant is sort of that hybrid type. But maybe a 1-2 punch. We hoped to see that last year with Weeding and Beyer, and it never really materialized. Was Drew Cook here last year? Or was that 2 years ago? I don't even remember with Drew Cook. He played so little. It was kind of disappointing. But your thoughts on tight end with Laporta and Sean?
Well, kind of what I foresee happening. I think Laporta is already on other teams' radars. But if Laporta really shows out early, I kind of foresee a lot of attention being given to him. And I think we kind of saw that in a different way with Fant and Hawkinson, where Fant had so much hype that defenses were really watching him. And I think it opened up Hawkinson, who had a much better season statistically in every way pretty much than Fant did. So I'm hoping anyway that Laporta gets going early and kind of draws some attention, and then maybe Beyer can kind of reap the benefits of that. Of guys looking away from a little bit more. So I'm hoping that it's a good, I don't know if it's a 1-2 punch like Fant where they're both, you know, real, real threats. Those guys were just so elite. I don't think you're going to match that, but I think Beyer could definitely get his if Laporta plays as well as I think, you know, to me, he's the guy I want to see out there just because he showed last year that he's the guy who can really make catches and get separation. So I feel pretty good about the tight end.
Special teams. Of course, Keith Duncan coming back for kickoffs and I think Caleb Shudak did a lot of the kickoffs last year, but they get Shudak and Duncan back. Shudak had entered the transfer portal and ended up staying. Potentially a guy who could maybe utilize that eligibility, development with the NCAA. If Iowa wanted him back and he wanted to come back and Duncan moved on, maybe he'd get a year in the spotlight to build his resume. But yeah, you get Shudak and Duncan in there, and then at punter you got Torrey Taylor, Ryan Gersandi, a couple punchers who will battle it out. I think there's another one from North Dakota, or North or South Dakota as well, that might factor in. Of course, Ryan Gersondi is a scholarship punter that's never really taken off at Iowa. So punter's a question mark. Kickoff returns, I think we're pretty solid on that. Amir Smith Marset, Ivory Kelly Martin. I don't know if you have watched any of Charlie Jones' tape. I think you said you didn't, but if you watch him at Buffalo, he returns kickoffs well. So he's a guy who probably Iowa could rely on if need be back there. Maybe even a guy who could run at punt returner, because punt return is going to be another weakness. I mean, Nico Reganey, Max Cooper tried it out that back, you know, last year, and both guys struggled at times, and I thought Cooper was okay, but not dynamic. I mean, Amir Smith-Marset said yesterday he'd love to do it, but coaches aren't running him at punt return. What are your overall thoughts about, I mean, long snapper, I don't think is going to be a concern either, even though they lost Jackson Suber. But I mean, what are your overall thoughts on special teams? Where are the weaknesses, and where do you see Iowa excelling in this year? But besides kicker, obviously, with Keith Duncan and Shudak.
Well, I think punt returns will be interesting for sure. You know, as far as Amir Smith-Marset, I think I said earlier that, you know, I don't know that Ferentz would spread a guy that thin to be having him on offense and have him doing kick returns and punt returns. So that could be why he's not in the running for that position. But I haven't watched much of Charlie Jones. I just read of what other players had said about him, and they seemed to all have really positive glowing reviews of him, at least in practice. So he could be a guy that maybe doesn't see the field too much on offense just because of how much depth they have at that position. But I could see Ferentz trying to work him in onto the field on special teams. So that could definitely happen. I'd kind of like to see Goodson back there. I just think he would be probably a good punt returner. Just the way he plays, his vision and shiftiness. So, did you ask about all special teams or just
returning? Yeah, I mean, where do you see Iowa being able to? I mean, kickoff returns. I mean, you got one of the best in the business, in the Amir Smith-Marset. I guess where would you say the biggest glaring weakness special teams? Why would you call it? Would you say punter, or would you say punt returning?
Well, I think punting is more of a question mark than a concern. I'm not actually concerned, I guess, that you know, just not being sure does bring a level of concern no matter what. But from everything I've heard, I think they'll probably be okay with punting. Punt returning, I'm not really worried about, be honest. We don't tend to have real high standards for that. We haven't had great punt returning for a few years now, so I think there are a couple guys that could probably make a impact there. As far as kicking, you know, I feel good about the place kickers overall. I don't have any concern there, so feel pretty good about the special teams in general.
Am I missing anything? I mean, we've talked offense, we talked defense, special teams. Of course, we don't have a two deep bet yet. We talked about that earlier, but we will definitely talk more Iowa, you know, roster and positional strengths and maybe some weaknesses when we get a two deep. But I mean, is there anything we haven't covered roster wise?
Can't really think of anything. I think we pretty much covered it.
C.J. Beathard, I want to give a shout-out to him. C.J. Beathard, what a performance late in that game on Sunday night. If it hadn't been for a drop on that Hail Mary, what a play and opportunity for him to retake that backup position in San Francisco. Really proud of him. George Kittle's just a monster. 15 catches for 183 yards and a touchdown. He's the best tight end in the NFL. He's going to be one of the best all time. I mean, there's no question about it. He's going to be one of the best tight ends of all time. People can laugh at me and say it's a stupid comment to make, but prove me wrong. Prove me wrong on that. I mean, how is he not on that trajectory right now?
Yeah, I mean, unless his career gets cut short, I mean, he's showing to be, you know, at a Gronkowski level of performance and hype. I mean, he doesn't really seem to have any real weaknesses, glaring weaknesses. And, you know, a lot of people have been saying that he may be the best skill position player in the NFL overall, not just at tight end, which is quite a statement considering some of the talent that's in the NFL. So I'm not saying that he is, but that's been in the conversation. So he's definitely on another level. You know, I think none of us, when we watched him at Iowa, would have ever guessed what would have happened. I always thought he was going to be a decent, you know, NFL tight end. He was a good blocker, and I figured he'd get a shot. But, he just doesn't even look like the same guy. He's just explosive and super strong and just a beast out of this. Almost like it's not like Christian McCaffrey, but with both of those guys, I didn't expect them to translate that well. I thought McCaffrey would translate somewhat, but they both have been exceeded my expectations completely. So Kittle has had more of a jump than
well, that's McCaffrey, the thing. I mean, both McCaffrey was unbelievable in college. Kittle was not. I mean, he was good. He wasn't great.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I was just shocked by both of them. I think McCaffrey is just at such a high level in the NFL. I just didn't think that would happen. But yeah, Kittle just made a huge jump where he basically came out of nowhere, even for us, even for guys who watched him play. You can imagine people in San Francisco or whoever, anywhere in the country watching him, they have no idea. They probably never saw him play in college. If they saw Iowa play, they probably didn't even remember his name. So, yeah, he's just had a crazy jump from college to pro that I can't hardly remember being paralleled.
TJ Hockenson with another touchdown this past weekend. Noah Fant had a good game before getting hurt. Anthony Nelson's playing well in Tampa Bay. Geno Stone is in Baltimore. You got Amani Hooker who had a game-winning, game-sealing interception a week or two ago for the Titans. And you can go all over the place. Josh Jackson played Monday night. James Ferentz started at center for the Patriots on Monday due to injuries. It is really incredible to see what Iowa's doing in the NFL, and I think they're near a record mark. It's like 30, 32, something like that, active players or players on active rosters right now from Iowa. Carl Davis is with the Jags. It's really incredible. So on Iowa, I mean, it's great, and you know, we're going to get football here in a couple weeks. I'm with you, Alex. I think Iowa has a chance to win the West, and we'll make those predictions for the season as a whole. You know, our game-by-game predictions coming up, and hopefully we'll get a two-deep to talk about as well. So for Alex Bratta, I'm Corey Bratta. Thanks for listening to Week 129 of Bratta's Branded Thoughts. We'll talk to you again soon, breaking down hopefully a two-deep, certainly breaking down the schedule, and giving our win-loss predictions for each week. Iowa-Gonzaga, that was the big announcement last night in men's basketball. What a schedule, if it's true. We assume CBS Sports is accurate on this. Iowa Gonzaga the same day as championship weekend in the Big Ten. So it should be interesting to see, but sports is just about back for Iowa fans here in the Midwest. We'll talk to you soon. Again, stay healthy. Keep your mask on if you can, if at all possible. Keep your mask on. That way we get sports this year and kind of get a distraction from the year that has been 2020 and kind of been a total melee of a calendar year. Keep your mask on, stay safe, stay healthy. We'll talk to you soon. Go Hawks.